Today's guest is the amazing and talented Blaise Mencius. He is an actor, comedian, and filmmaker living in New York City. He has also played characters in video games like Grand Theft Auto V and Red Dead Redemption 2. He was also the host of the Webby Award-winning game show Song Pop Live. You can find him online at blaisemencius.com. Now let's go spark some madness. Thank you so much for listening to Spark the Madness.
I'm glad. So what's up? What do I need to know, boss?
Not much. I mean, this is just like a space for you to just kind of share, talk, just like a conversation kind of style all around mental health. I had this one idea to like maybe start off with just doing like funny weird faces, so just like a funny face frenzy to just kind of like loosen us up and just get into that emotional energy. So just like whatever face you want to do, put it to any emotion and just like do that for like a minute or so or whatever.
Okay.
Just making nice faces at each other.
I'm just gonna get nice and close.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for trying that with me. This is the first time I've tried it.
Great. That was fun.
Yeah.
That was really, really fun. I'm feeling, you caught me on a good day, so just I'm feeling really good, so I'm happy to be here.
Awesome.
I'm game for whatever, Foster.
Awesome. I'm so glad. Every day with you, man, is always a good day.
Thank you. Feelings mutual.
Yeah, so I guess like we could just like share about our commemoration of like, you know, that experience about being in the hospital, if that's something that you want to talk about. If not, that's totally fine.
That's fine. We could talk about that.
Yeah. So I guess just like some things that kind of led you into that place and like how you got there.
Got it. Well, this was around the fall of 2018 that I was feeling pretty down. I had a breakup that I went through that was like bringing me down, and then there were some career things that weren't going the way I'd hoped that was bringing me down, and I was working hard but not making a lot of money. And so what it looked like for me was a lot of not eating and smoking lots of marijuana and not eating and drinking lots of coffee and working a ton at crazy hours and not resting, not getting enough rest, and sort of becoming depressed and like suicidal and sort of wanting to die and thinking about dying by stepping into traffic. And there would be nights where I'm coming home drunk or high or both from whatever it is, work or something. And I'm, you know, thinking about, oh, I'm here at First Avenue. It's very busy. Like, what if I just walk now? Or occasionally crossing against a light, not in a New York way, but in a more reckless way. But no one knew that I was doing that.
No, I totally feel you. I've definitely had that moment where I stood in front of a subway, or like, you know, like just like not even just going into the subway. Like I knew that if I went down there, it would not be okay for me. So I would just like stand there, just like looking at the steps, and I would just have to like call my mom or call something or just like walk for a little while. Cause I knew that if I walked down those stairs, it was just like, that was it. Like, I just knew that once I did that, like I'd just be done.
Yeah, it's a weird place where you have like a little, it feels like you have just enough control, you know?
Yeah, it's like just enough to just be like, oh, maybe, like just like dancing with it almost, with that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was pretty skinny. I was like 100, I'm like 100 and 65, 70 pounds now, but at the time I was like 145 pounds. Wow. And I was like really slender, and it was like very noticeable, and I was getting so many compliments on how good I looked.
That's the fucking worst. When people were like, "Oh my god, you look so amazing." I was just like, yeah, and it comes from like the deepest sadness.
Yeah, you know? And I'm like not eating
or like self-neglect.
Yeah. I would just like, how much calories could I get for X amount of dollars? And so like I would eat like nothing all day and just drink coffee. And if there was anything free at work, I would eat it. But then I would just go home and get like two double cheeseburgers from McDonald's. And like that was the only thing I ate all day, with those two double cheeseburgers, or sometimes less. But yeah, I looked great according to many people, even at times myself.
It's like, sad looks sexy on me. It's like it reinforces the behavior almost on this like weird twisted cycle.
Yes. And then I would get sort of like a little agoraphobic, I guess. Is that the word? Like, I didn't want to go, like, I was afraid of going to the grocery store because I thought I would just start crying. Like, I would just get overwhelmed and not know what I want, or someone would just make me feel weird. Like, I just was afraid to go to the store to go shopping because I just thought I would start crying and like be an emotional mess.
I actually have a weird joke about that, but I also had a moment where like I was there at the grocery store, like had my whole basket filled with food and everything, and I just like dropped it there in the middle, and I had a panic attack and I just left. I was like, I can't do this right now. I was like, it doesn't mean, like, I don't need to eat this food, fuck it.
I have a joke that I've been telling about this subject as well. It's kind of a new joke. Can I share it with you?
Yes, please.
The premise is that I have depression superpowers, that there's things that I can do that I can only do when I'm depressed. It's really amazing. Like, for example, I have the ability to delay a trip to the grocery store by making a meal using only condiments in my fridge. There's nothing that's better than a little pickle juice, some ketchup, some tapatio, some chili flakes, and now you've got depression stew. Nothing, honestly, Foster, nothing tastes better than avoiding human interaction.
It's like that sick satisfaction when you have plans with somebody and they cancel.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, fuck yes.
Thank God. I don't need to go to the grocery store. Look, I got a meal right here in this jar of mayonnaise. Like, that's my meal. Fuck the grocery store. I'm better than this. I don't need to go. It's fine.
I'm creative right now. I'm like I'm using my ingenuity right here.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's beautiful. So when did it get to a point where it like became like noticeable?
I would like talk to friends and tell them that I'm like really unhappy, and I would say things like, I don't want to be here, like I don't want to do this anymore. I didn't necessarily say I want to die, but I did express that like I'm really unhappy right now, you know, just to some close friends, and they just sort of were keeping an eye on me, I guess, a little bit more and seeing what was going on. And on December, I think it was December 28, 2018, I had gotten up early. I worked 3 hours at 7 a.m. and then for 2 hours at 12 p.m. and then from 4 to 7. I had a very long day that day. Oh, and shit. I came home, and that was like a long day after many long days, and like working on Christmas and like not going home, and like it was just like a lot. Like, I worked all through Christmas. And ate my Christmas on a plastic plate at my workplace. On that day I came home in the afternoon, and I brought home a big bottle of whiskey and like chips or some sort of salty snack. And I had two friends come over, and I'm like, oh, you're both coming over? Awesome. I just bought a bunch of whiskey and some snacks. This is great. And it was actually an intervention. And they're like, we're going to take you to the hospital. And I was like, what? Like, I don't want to do that. You know? And it was just like, oh, I was just kind of like in shock. But we like took the cab. They like helped me pack a bag, and then like we took a cab. They already had done the research and figured out where they were going to take me. They took me to New York Presbyterian, which from what I've been told is like one of the best in the city.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, they took me there, and I'm in the cab at cross town. It's on the up, like east side, and I was just like, I'm gonna get out of this cab and fucking run, because I don't want to do this. I was really like, my heart was racing. I was like hyperventilating. I was in the front seat, and my two friends were in the back. So I was like, I could just fucking open this door and fucking run. And I was like, I don't know where I'm gonna run to or what, but like, I'm gonna fucking run.
It's like, that's my plan. It's like, as soon as we stop, I'm out of here.
Because I don't want to do this. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it's gonna do for me, but I feel like I'm going to jail. You know, like, I don't know. I'm just scared. And yeah, they brought me there, and I was there for 6 days from December 28th to January 3rd. And that was a Friday to a Thursday. Over New Year's, I got to pass New Year's in there.
Nothing
We
like
weren't.
celebrating the holidays at like a mental institution.
Oh my God. We were popping bottles, but it wasn't champagne. It was like Lexapro and other antidote. Those are the bottles that we were popping.
But I just want to like first say like how fucking amazing it is that you have people in your life that love and care for you and look out for you enough to like do something like that. Like that is seriously a testament to like who you are and your character. Because like not everybody would do that. Not everybody has like that world of friends that knows to look out for those things. So like I just am in awe of you for all that you are, is what I'm saying.
Thank you. That's very nice of you. Yeah, I'm very lucky. We don't have to get into it just yet, but the sad thing is of those two people that brought me in that intervention, one of them I'm no longer friends with anymore. And it kind of still has to do with my mental health and the choices that I've been making, which is a sad thing. What was I just going to say?
Sorry, I cut you off.
No, it's okay. No, it's a very nice thing that you said. I think, I mean, that was, you know, that was why I was so concerned for you when I found out where you were, and at the same time grateful that you were there, but I didn't know sort of the things that you were getting going through. So,
And thank you so much for coming to visit me. You have no idea how much that meant.
yeah. I'm glad you're welcome. Yeah, it's a wild time going in there.
Yeah, because it is kind of like you said, like prison.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to share, because you brought up how nice it is that I have people that care about me, and it is really wonderful, and I'm very grateful for that. But what I realized when I was in there is that there were some people that were there that seemed really like this was summer camp. Like they were excited to meet other people, and they were excited to go watch TV together, and maybe someone has a crush on somebody, but it was like very excited. I was like, I hate this. Like, I don't want to be here. I'm not happy. But I think the reason that some people were having a different experience is because when they were outside of there, their life was not good. You know, they didn't have people that they could be feel safe around, perhaps. You know, they may didn't have a great family or friends or community situation. So being in that facility for some of those people was probably the safest they've felt in a while, which really was heartbreaking and something that I sort of like realized in just being there for 6 days and sitting and watching and taking all of this in, as well as like dealing with my own shit, you know? So I did feel grateful, because I was like, oh, they're happy here. Not like they want to be there forever, but like they're happy, like enjoying things right now because they feel safe. Yeah, it is a frightening place.
Yeah, I remember being literally scared shitless. Like I did not shit for about like I think a week or so. And like I even had to like take medicine for it. And like that didn't even kick in till like a couple of days. And I was just like, Like, I've never really like had to feel what that means, like being so scared that you're literally scared shitless. I was like, yeah. And I kept eating. It wasn't like I wasn't eating. Like, I was eating all of the meals and everything like that. And I'm just, I don't know where this food is going. I'm just like filled with like poop energy. Wow. And it's just going nowhere. It's just all
because you're scared.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a hard time eating. That was my issue. They bring me all this food and I'm like, there's just so much going on. Like, I'm not hungry and I'm trying to eat it, but it's like feeling almost repulsive to me. Yeah. And I'm also just terrified also, you know, just scared. It feels like there's just always eyes on you.
Yeah.
People are, cause you guys, no one has anything to do or anywhere to be, and you don't have a phone or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like, everyone's just like watching everybody.
Yeah.
And it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I had one patient who, she was obsessed with me and would follow me everywhere. And at first I would let her sit with me. She would just come and sit at my lunch table, but I didn't talk because I didn't want to talk to anybody, you know? But after a while she became like a nuisance, and even if she wasn't sitting at my table, she always sat somewhere where I was her, like she had direct eye contact with me.
Jesus.
Like, maddening. It's maddening. Yeah. And this woman was maybe my age, but was sort of acting like a teenager. And I don't know what her issue was, but I just, like, it was driving me crazy. and I remember one morning, I think it was towards, I had been there a while and I had felt good enough to talk and stand up for myself. But it was like 7 a.m. and I'm on the computer checking my email. It's like the only time no one's making noise. It's the best part of the day is the early morning before breakfast. I would read the newspaper during that time, check my email, all that. It was fantastic.
it's like, this is my heaven right here.
Yeah, because no one was there to bother me. But she got up early that day and I'm on the computer, and then I see her down the hallway. She turns, she looks at me and she realizes it's me. And she starts walking towards me, and I was just like, Claudine, no, I don't even want to deal with you today. And it was like very loud, and no one had heard me shout at all. So everyone was like, what the fuck is going on? And like, she like kind of got scared, and then she went right back into her room. But like, oh my, and then someone came over to check my vitals, because they check your vitals like a bajillion times a day. Yeah. And they're like, your blood pressure is really high. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I just had like an incident.
That's with because somebody. I just displayed my boundaries, okay?
I was like, I just had an incident with someone. And no one knew that she was like following me, because I never told anybody. But like, I finally was like, this woman has been driving me crazy. Like, she follows me everywhere and doesn't leave me alone. And they're like, oh, okay, we'll make sure to separate her. I think it was like second to last day or something like that. So then I had like security detail. So that was nice.
Oh, that is nice.
But man, it was just like exhausting dealing with that.
Yeah, I know. It's like you don't realize like how intense all of these like human dynamics are until you're just all trapped in one little box. And you're just like, all right, now you guys have to live together. All of you strangers have to like find out how you're going to live together.
Yeah,
I remember when I first came in, it was, yeah. Oh, no, go for it. No, you were saying something. Please.
You sure?
Yeah.
My first night, they put you in like a room, but it's not forever. It's like a temporary thing, at least in my situation. And then the next day they bring me in with everybody. And that second night, my roommate was schizophrenic and had a lot of issues. Older gentleman, maybe in his 50s, and like middle of the night was just getting up and screaming in the bathroom and yelling and just, it's just not a big room that we shared. It was just the two of us, you know, everyone's paired up. And it was maddening, I was like, man, can you quiet down? But you can't really reason with this person. He didn't understand. And it was like a little scary. I remember I like asked a nurse, can you please put me somewhere else? And I'm like, we can't do that until morning. I'm like, can I just go sleep in the music room? I'm gonna sleep on the couch. I don't give a shit. And they're like, fine, okay. And like, I just want to sleep. And the man is like screaming. So I did that. And then the following day, they put me in a room with a guy that looked like Santa Claus if he was like 5'3" and slender. It was like a really sweet, like, old man. Who I think lived, he lived in the subway stations. And I think he had been there several times. That was not his first time in that facility. So
yeah. Yeah, that's another thing I realized, that it was like either a lot of people who they would see again would come back very often, or like there was this one girl who was there for like 3 months. Like that was just like her home for like 3 months. And I mean, like I was there for like 2 weeks and I couldn't even imagine like being there for 3 months. Like looking at her face and just hearing her voice, she just sounded so defeated.
Wow.
Yeah. She was just like, I don't know when I'm ever gonna get out of here.
Wow. Yeah, it's unclear. It's really, there's definitely a lot of like performative behavior, right? 'Cause like the better you act, the more likely they are to let you go, you
Yeah.
know? And so I'm not trying to say that I like tried to lie or anything, but there was a certain point where I was like, I'm ready to get out. Like I do feel better and I do feel like I have some tools. But I want to get the fuck out, you
Yeah.
know? And so when I talked to them, I made sure like I looked people straight in the eye, I cracked jokes, I tried to be charm, you know what I mean? Like I was ready, but I did not have that ability when I went in. When I went in, I was just broken and like couldn't talk, couldn't look people in the eye, just not didn't want to be alive, you know?
Yeah. It's just like very reactionary. And it's like something happens like somewhere in the middle there where you're just like, all right, I'm gonna do anything to get out of here. Like whatever, like take the pills, sure, fine, whatever the fuck you need, like I need to do. I'm gonna answer all your questions, do all that. And it's just like I just need to not be here anymore. Yeah. Did they
The
have like
real
a wait, what were you saying?
No, go ahead.
Did they have like a I guess like other like programs and like activities and stuff like that for you to
You read my mind. That was exactly
do?
what I was gonna say. So the thing that sucks about going into the mental health ward, if you can plan around the holidays,
Yeah.
don't go to the mental health ward on a holiday because there's very limited programming. And so there's even less to do. And if you are not someone that likes to just sit around with idle time, it drives you nuts. Sorry to use all these like euphemisms for losing one's mind, going
But
crazy.
no,
But like,
I
but
mean.
yeah, like one of the activities was bingo, and they just keep calling until everyone wins. And I'm not trying to be insulting to anyone's, but it was just like, this is not anything, you know? This is
Like
nothing.
everybody gets a trophy. I'm like, just fucking
I complained. I was like, I need something to do here. Like, what do we do? And like, well, it's a holiday. We usually have more programming after the holiday. I'm like, so I just sit around? Like, I was like, I need something to do. I was very adamant about it at some point. I think this must have been like 3 days in, you know, where I'm like, what's going on here? And then they kept asking me, like, well, what does your doctor say? I'm like, what does my doctor say? I've met like five different doctors. I don't know. And I tell them all the same thing. I don't know what's going. I don't work here, bro. Like, I don't know who my doctor is or how things work. Like, and the weird thing was, I wasn't being evaluated as often because of the holiday, which makes sense, but it's just like, it was very maddening and very confusing.
It's frustrating. It's so
Yes.
frustrating because it's like you're held there. You don't really want to be there. And it's like you're trying to do all of the things, but everything is handled so slowly. And
Yep.
there's only like certain amounts of time in the day where it's like you can do certain things. And it's like if you miss that window, it's like you have to be very proactive about getting things done because no one's going to come up to you and be like, oh, have you seen anybody? Oh, have you done this? No, the only things that they really care about are like getting your vitals and like making sure everybody gets their meds. I feel like those were like the main things.
That's a good point. You're like giving me flashbacks of like
Yeah.
you always need something from someone.
Yeah.
Like whether it's information or you know, when am I gonna get out or what can I do or when's like you always like every day you wake up and you're like, I fucking need something from someone and
Yeah.
how am I going to get it? Maybe it's like I just want another pair of slippers or can I get some fresh socks? And like they're so busy because everybody needs something, right? And some people are demanding about things that are to the nursing or the staff less important, right? You know, or they're like, yeah, I'll get to it because there's like shit going down, you know? But you always need something. You like have to get really good at asking for shit. Because like you said, no one's gonna like go out of their way to figure out extra things other than take your meds and your vitals.
Yeah, because it's like if you do get frustrated and you start like yelling and demanding, it's like you're less likely to get any of that stuff because it's like they don't want to deal with you when it's like you're coming at them like that. And it's really frustrating. Like anything, like even just like getting water to drink, it's like you have to like ask for getting water and stuff like that. It's like so insane. And I do remember like one really big issue was like about food. It was like some people, like if you slept through meals or something like that, you just didn't eat They didn't care. They didn't make sure that people like got their like food and everything like that. So there'd be like several times where it's like people would be like given drugs that like make them totally pass out, and then they'd wake up and then they're just like angry because they're also like hungry. Yeah. And it's like they've missed all the meals for the day, and they're just like, okay, here's some graham crackers and juice. And I'm just like, this is nothing. So it's like almost like they set up these environments to like trigger people into like, okay, how are they going to emotionally react against this? I don't know if it's intentional, but it feels that way almost at times.
I think it's just, it's a difficult thing to deal with.
Yeah.
So much. These nurses and the staff, like the stuff they deal with every day, it's just like, you just never know what's going to happen. Is wild. I'll tell you one more story. So when I got out, I was sober for a bit, and I was in a program that they, like an outpatient program that they put me in. I was very grateful for this program. I went for maybe half a year, but I had this, I would do these group therapy sessions, and then I would meet with like a counselor one-on-one, maybe once a week, and group therapy sessions twice a week. This was at Bellevue Hospital. And my counselor, I really kind of liked her. She was like this kooky older woman who had a lot of Native American stuff in her office, and wore like ponchos and stuff, and seemed like a white lady to me, but whatever. She was really cool and just sort of got me, and you know, I would talk a lot of, like at that time I was telling her how I was like, the only place I feel confident right now is on stage, but every other place in my life, I feel like I can just crumble. And I'm afraid of that becoming, that bleeding into my performing on stage. Like that's my only thing that I had left.
Yeah. This is like my fucking lifeline right here.
Yeah. And she got that. I guess she was a musician at one time. But then at a certain point, I was like ready to go do a show after having not done a show for many months. And I was doing a show at Greenwich Village Comedy Club, and she was like, can I come? I would love to come and support you. And in my mind, I thought, yeah, that would be great. That's cool. You understand me. And like, I might talk a little bit about my experience on stage, but not a lot. And it was so crazy, Foster, because she showed up hammered.
Oh, wow.
And she's like my sobriety counselor. And she showed up hammered. Like, because I was working the door, and she's, I'm so excited. Well, at first I didn't know this. She's like, I'm so excited to see you. I'm so excited. And she was just like very emotional and positive. And I was like, cool. But the show started, and she was just like talking, and not like heckling, but just reacting aloud like a drunk lady.
Like just someone who's never been to a comedy show.
Exactly.
Like super supportive. But I'm just like, could you just shut the fuck up, because your support is actually hindering the practice.
Exactly. No, I don't. And I'm backstage, and someone's like, who's that drunk lady? I'm like, that's my sobriety counselor. And they're like, no fucking way. And I'm like, way, it's her, man. She's drunk. And then you know, during my set, it was fine, but she definitely ruined it with talking. And then after the show, she came up to me. It was just like, you were so great. I'm so proud of you. She was like kind of on the verge of tears. And then she was like, and you looked so sexy up there. And I'm like, whoa, my God. I'm like, okay, thank you. I was like, I gotta go. Like, I gotta go.
Oh,
and I think,
man,
I went to the Grizzly Pear with a fellow comic and drank some club soda. And I was like, dude, I just had the fucking craziest experience with my sobriety counselor. And so I ended up reporting this to people there. Like, next time. So I had a meeting with her. That was on a Friday. I had a meeting with her on a Monday. And I had to go to this meeting. And I was just like, she hasn't acknowledged this or sent me an email or like apologize. And I'm just like, I'm not going to this meeting. So I told her I can't make it. I'm going to cancel. But I ended up coming so I could go report her. And I like knock on this other counselor's office. I'm like, I have something very serious I need to tell someone. Who do I talk to? And they're like, you could talk to me. And I tell them, and they like can't believe what I've just, like, she's like silent and just staring at me. They can't believe it. And I'm like, yeah, I know, it's fucking crazy. And I'm like, and I'm a meeting, I'm not like being funny right now. Like, this is a real thing that happened. And then next thing I know, the like New York Justice Department calls me and I have to like go to like some place in Brooklyn and I'm in a conference room with like a tape recorder and they ask me questions about her. And I'm like, yep, this is what she did. I'm gonna tell you. And then I think I got like some sort of letter that they like resolved the situation. But I don't know what that means. I assume she got fired, but she may not have. But there's like a part of me that was like, man, I should have sued them and got a lot of money. But like, that's just like not my style.
Yeah. Still, that's so huge that you actually like reported it. I probably would have been like, all right, I'm just never going back there. Like, fuck sobriety.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not sober now. I definitely have times where I take some time to be sober because sometimes I get a little out of control. But like, but yeah, that was just a wild experience. It's like funny, but when I try to talk about it on stage, it's like sad. So I don't talk about it on stage, but I'm happy to share the anecdote.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing it, because I feel like that's like the really like key important thing about like, especially within the mental health, like fashion and the mental health facility, is that the people who are there like helping you and healing you, it's like they have their own shit that they're also going through too. It's like, we're not like, no one out here is like a complete whole like well-functioning human being. And it's like, if you are, like, I feel like you're lying to yourself a little bit, you know. Yeah. It's like we're all on some like process of that we need to like work on. I mean, if you are, like, by all means, like, you know, power to you if you're just out there humbly living.
Yeah,
I remember like there were a lot of issues with like the staff there just being generally just rude and just nasty and like instigating stuff that didn't need to happen. And I'm just like, why are you bringing your baggage into this environment where people are trying to heal? I'm just like, this person is like telling you about how they were abused and how they were assaulted, and like you're giving her like bullshit back, like just because you don't want to deal with the way that she's talking to you right now about this. It's like, you need to like come from another place of like perspective and realize that, like, you know, it's like the compartmentalize your shit, you know where to bring that part of yourself and where not to.
Yeah. I would have stayed in that program longer had that incident not happened. And then I sort of bounced around between therapists, and that was a difficult process when you don't have a lot of money. So I'm sort of in a place where I would love to be going back to therapy once a week again, but I haven't found the place to do so. And I don't know, navigating insurance and all this stuff, it's always like, I gotta gear myself up to it, because it's something that I frankly don't understand. I think is built for us to not understand. And so it's just like, I feel so small and confused when I gotta call my insurance. I'm like, what do I, you know, they use all this jargon. I'm like, I just want to get a therapist. Like, where do I go?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it took me like months. Like, the outpatient programs that I was put into were just garbage. Like, they gave me a psychiatrist, but I've never got a therapist. I never got a therapist this entire time, like after I left the hospital. And I kept telling them, was like, I don't want somebody who's just going to like give me medicine and then that's it. Like, I need like somehow to process this. So I ended up doing like a lot of like my own like self practices and self healings and stuff like that. And I've just now finally getting a therapist, and I had to go through my primary care physician and get like somebody like prescribed through them. But it was like jumping through hoops, you know. And it's like, I tried to do the BetterHelp thing, but even that became like too expensive, and I'm just like, I can't. Like, it just like felt like I was just grasping at straws, and there was like nothing that I could reach for anymore, you know. It's like, I had wanted to start this podcast like way back, but I'm just like, I'm not even in a place where I can like even like touch on the topic of mental health without like crumbling like a fucking cookie.
So,
it is. It's, I do feel like it's, like you said, like like a system designed like almost against you in a fashion.
Yeah. Money. It's all, you know, about them. What they them. Do. But
yeah. But I do feel like also like comedy in its own way, like becomes like your like therapy. I was like, I know it's like people say like, don't make comedy your therapy, but at the same time, it's like, this is your only space to like talk, speak your mind and have people listen. It's like, not say shit, but just like just fucking listen.
Yeah, I don't rely on it for therapy, but I'm okay with it being therapeutic. It can be therapeutic and not be therapy. It can make you feel good. I wrote so much when I was in the hospital. I wrote a ton of jokes. In fact, I keep it as, just 1 second, as a reminder. I have the little safety pen that they give you when you're in there that you can't hurt yourself or anyone with because it's made out of really soft plastic, and that's what the point looks like. These are the pens they give you on the inside. And yeah. I held on to it because it's just a reminder of that time. And I have all the papers of like all the like jokes and things that I wrote. Most of them I don't think are great, but I've tried some of them on stage and there's something there. But yeah, I wrote so much when I was in there. I saved this little safety pen.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, they gave us pencils. They were like, you know, those like short pencils that you get at the library that I guess like, yeah. So it's like, I don't know. They still scared the shit out of me. Cause I was just like I know someone couldn't hurt you badly, but I still feel like they could fucking like fuck you up with that. You know?
You could like sharpen that down.
Yeah. They were really sharp pencils, man. Yeah. And then they would also give you toothbrush and a comb. And like some people would like fashion their comb almost into like a shiv, you know? And I was just like I was just running in my mind all of the ways that somebody could like hurt me or do something to me. And like when I first came in there was like blood on the walls, blood on the floors, like everything like that. Yeah, it was insane.
Thankfully, there wasn't much in terms of violence in the facility that I was in. There was definitely a lot of outbursts and a lot of, you know, emotional screaming and yelling and, you know, arguing, but there wasn't much in terms of violence while I was there, thankfully.
Yeah, but you like, you almost like, you never know, because it's like when you're around those people, it's like you still feel like it could just pop off at any moment. And also like being a male in that situation, it's like I can't even imagine, because it's like you have all of those extra like testosterone just kind of like running through you. So
it was weird.
But that idea of like having that creative outlet in that place, I do feel like was like one of the most like therapeutically healthy like things that could have ever happened. Like when I was there, like we did have like a music program and like an art thing that we would do every once in a while. And they also had like dance, like they would like come around. And so you could like participate in that. So there were like those things. And like, those were honestly like the saving grace. Like the only time that I like felt like a human again, like I could just like connect, you know.
That's nice. That's finding those places where you can feel like you're doing something human. Yeah. I think for me, it was being able to write and being able to read the newspaper.
It's nice that you got newspapers, man. Well,
I would have friends. So I was very grateful. Okay. I had a lot of people come visit me. And some people came almost once a day. And so those people, I would ask them like, hey, can you bring me like the newspaper? And New York Times, like that would be really helpful. So that was like a wonderful lifeline to have people, or people who brought me clothes, like because there were certain items obviously that I couldn't wear, that they took away from you, but like so that way I didn't have to wear the smock. Like I had friends bring me clothes, and that like does a lot for your self-esteem when you look in the mirror and you're in that smock. It's like I'm like, I don't even, how did I get here? Is this me right now? And then to have a friend bring you your hoodie and you're like, oh great, I like look like just me again. Like this is great. Those little things,
they make such a big difference. Yeah.
I had a friend, she brought me pictures of me and all my friends so I could have pictures of me and my friends in my room.
Oh my God, that's so sweet.
It was really special. Books, newspaper. I got really into ginger tea. I don't know why. So I'd have friends bring me ginger tea. I'm very grateful for all those people who came to visit me and brought me things or just helped me pass the time, you know?
Yeah. And did they know that you were in there because like you would call them and tell them, or was it like the friends that helped you get there?
Those two friends that brought me in were sort of like my critical people, and they were doing everything for me on the outside. Like one of them reached out to my work and told them, because I had shifts that I was going to miss. And they reached out to my work and like took care of that. And they were sort of like, you know, who do you want to know about this? And I told them like, these people are allowed to know about this and they are welcome to come visit me, you know? And so they were sort of like schedule, like this one friend was sort of scheduling my friends so that way they wouldn't all come on the same day at once. Like, you want to scatter them out, right? Because it's like you're there for so much time by yourself.
Yeah, especially not with having like any activities or anything like that. And you get a visitor, you're just like, yes!
So like, I had a lot of friends that were doing things from the outside, making my parents aware of the situation because they live in California. For those that are listening, I'm in New York City. So that's like was very critical and helpful. Because when you're in there, you don't have, for those that don't know, you don't have your phone. You don't have that. And I was very lucky in that I had some internet access, but not every facility offers that.
That was like really shocking because like we had nothing like that, you know. Yeah, we had like a TV and like they had phones on either side, like the men's side and the women's side. And you can like use those at like certain times.
Yeah, so, but the phones are shitty.
Yeah. They're always like crackly and stuff. Like it made me almost feel like I was like hearing things because it's like this phone was like so bad. And I was just like, wait, am I?
Yeah, the phones are shitty and they're really short corded intentionally because they don't want you spending a lot of time on the phone. They make it uncomfortable.
Yeah. And also everything always like smelled really bad. Like, I feel like people would just like pee anywhere and everywhere, like almost like marking their territory in a sense. I don't know. But it's like when you're in there, it's almost like jungle rules. It feels like, you know, people act very animalistic about like the smallest things.
Yeah. There's a lot
what
of
are you guys.
Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
What were you saying?
No, please. What was your question?
Were you guys given like outside time or were there like times where you could like go outside or anything like that?
There was no outside time.
Wow.
There was no place to go outside. It was, we were like on the, I don't know, maybe 15th floor of a building. It had a really tremendous view of the East River and Roosevelt Island. So like was nice to watch the sunrise and read the paper and it's very tranquil, but there was no outside time, which was not ideal. Mm-hmm. I'm a very physically active person, and so even man, if I had something like a basketball hoop to like shoot hoops at or something, like it would just be amazing, but I didn't have anything. I did push-ups and sit-ups like in my room at times, just to get that energy out. Had this energy and nowhere to put it. Once I started feeling better, that's, you know, when the energy comes back, you know?
Yeah. I remember there was like one other patient there that I would just like do laps around because there was kind of like this little semicircle there. We would just do like laps around that. And then they would also like allow you to like put on the radio. So there was like this kind of hallway area where we would just like go there and we would just like dance or like listen to the radio and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, just like the little things, like just being able to see the sunset and the sunrise were like amazing because it was like almost every single day, it just felt like, I don't know if I'm going to see another sunrise or another sunset. It was like that. Yeah. It was like that bad. So it's like, I have no idea. So it's like, that was like so important for me to at least be able to see those two things.
Were you able to go outside?
Yeah, they had this a little like courtyard area. So for things like music and for some of the other like talk things that they did, like if it was a nice day, they would like let us like be outside. And I would just like sometimes I would just go out there, like whether or not I cared about what they were talking about or anything, I would just like go out there just to have fresh air and to have the sun hit me. Because I was just like, I could not stand like just being inside that much.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
It's nice that there was that available. And you were there for 2 weeks. That's much longer than me. I was there just 6 days. So I can't imagine that.
Yeah. Cause it's like every single time that you like act up or like they have to like inject you, every single time that they have to inject you, it's like that's automatically they have to hold you there for 72 hours. So it's like a 3-day hold, like automatically if that happens. And that happened to me about like, I think two or three times. I'm not sure. So it's like, it kind of just reset every single time. So would you say there are any like tools or anything that you got from there that are like still helping you out to this day? Like, I mean, besides like the pen and everything like that and writing, of course.
I don't drink as much coffee. I realize that a certain amount of caffeine and I'm just creating anxiety and stress in myself by drinking too much. And when I was at my most depressed, I was not eating and just drinking coffee all day long, like 6-7 cups a day. And I don't think that's good for me. And so that's one thing is I I have like one cup of coffee in the morning and that's it. Because it's just too much. I start to feel panicky. And if something negative does happen, then I don't handle it well. And I'm like, why am I freaking out so much? And it's like, I think I'm just over-caffeinated, as silly as that sounds.
Yeah, no, no, it's so true. As I remember, like, when I was in there, it's like there, I don't know if like people would do like this bartering kind of system a lot of the time, like people would barter food and everything like that. And I'm not a huge like coffee drinker to begin with, but there would be some people who would just be like drinking, like they would just get as many cups of coffee as they could, and you could just like see how much like more amped up they were. And it was like, I get it, like it was like to help them like through the day, but it was just like you could just see the effects of these very like small things on people, you know. So you forget like how sensitive your body is to everything, you know? And it's like, when you're in these like fragile states, it's like those things do make it harder for you to just like regulate your basic emotions. I'm just like, why can't I? It's like, fuck, this normally would not piss me off, but right now I can't.
I have a bartering story where it was at the bingo and I was really miserable. I'm like, this is fucking stupid, right? Because it's bingo. And I eventually won, and I had a choice between either a piece of chocolate for my prize or like a rubber coin purse. Why? I don't know. And like, which one would you like? And I'm like, and I wasn't trying to be a dick, but I was like, how about, can I get a cup of coffee? And they're like, there's no coffee. And I'm like, we have like breakfast and lunch. And they're like, yeah, but they bring it up here. There's no coffee here. And I'm like, there's doctors everywhere. There's gotta be some coffee. And they're like, sorry, I can't give you any coffee right now. And I'm like, all right, fine. And so I like don't take either prize and I go to walk out. And one of the other patients, she immediately comes over to me. She comes out to the room and she's like, hey, are you gonna take your prize? And I'm like, what? He's like, your chocolate, you didn't take it. Can I have it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't like, yeah, I'm sure they'll give you a piece no matter what. But I was like, sure, you can have it. She's like, I'll get you an extra coffee at lunch. And then like lunch comes around and then she comes over and brings, she ordered a coffee and she have to order in advance.
Yeah.
And she brought me an extra coffee and I'm like, thank you. Like, it was very nice. She wasn't trying to get anything. She just like felt that I like gifted her some chocolate and felt the need to pay it back. And I was like, it's fine. But she was very nice. And there was a couple of times when Claudine would like try to harass me and this woman would like stick up for me. She never spoke to me. She would just always was one of those ones that just was always watching, right? She didn't speak much, but she was kind of imposing. And like one or two times she would stick up for me just because I let her have that chocolate that was allegedly mine, you know?
I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's so funny. So funny.
Man, it's so like the smallest things, the tiniest things like mean so much. It's like when you're in that place, it's like they mean so much. I feel like that's like what I gain from it the most. It's like little things like matter huge.
Yeah. Everyone, like I said, everyone wants something, you know. Everyone wants something. The other thing I want to say in terms of like tools and things to when I feel, oh, I'm not feeling okay, what do I do? The thing that also sticks out in my mind that the doctors told me was, as silly as it sounds, but sleep. That like, he's like, most of the people that come here, when they do come here, the first thing they need is rest. And they haven't been getting that. It's not like that's the main reason, but like it's a contributing factor, you know? Yeah. And just getting rest in a way that's like, you know, where you're not, you know, don't, you know, try not to work in bed because you want your bed to be a restful place. So like keep the laptop out of bed and things like that, you know? But I'm much more courteous to myself about allowing myself rest and being like, nah, I don't need to do that. I'm just going to sleep.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know. I used to like prioritize everything else. It's like, you sleep when you're dead. You know? I'm just like, no, rest is very crucial. You're so true. So true. Yeah. Was your bed there actually like comfortable?
It was all right.
Yeah.
It wasn't like terrible, but it wasn't great. But it was all right. Yeah. It felt like a dorm bed, you know, kind of hard and springy.
Yeah.
The shower was like, we had our own personal shower in our room.
Oh, that's what's up.
Yeah, so it was just me and my roommate that I shared it with, the little Santa Claus. And And Thomas was his name. There we go. Mm. Thomas. Yeah. But the shower was sort of like not the best hot water. Sometimes it was kind of cold and kind of just came spitting out. Not really like a shower, per se.
Yeah, ours were like these like gym kind of like push buttons.
Oh, that's
like,
right. Yeah. They only ran for like 8 minutes or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and then it was just like just cut off.
You have to press it again if you want to like shower.
Yeah, yeah. But it always like comes off like cold at first. So I'm just like, ah, fuck. Yes. Is this like a cold therapy thing? And then the next time it was warm and I'm just like, is this like, I felt like the shower was like fucking playing tricks.
Oh my God, you're totally giving me a flashback. You're absolutely right. Sometimes it would be ice cold and then suddenly way too hot and like and it would just fluctuate between that, and so it was really like maddening because you're like showering but then like diving out and coming back in, diving out because sometimes the water was just so hot and then it would turn off and it was really like unrelaxing experience. I love taking a shower in life, but there it was not a fun time taking a shower. I don't even know where I put my you can't put your towel anywhere because you can't hang anything for obvious reasons.
Our doors wouldn't even like lock or close. They were just like swing doors.
Oh, ours would close but they did not lock.
And
they would check on us every, they put eyes on us at least every 20 minutes,
right? Okay,
every 20 or 30 they had put eyes on us, which means like they'd open your door if it was closed and then just stick their head in. Is that Blaze? Is that Thomas? Cool. Close the door. And so like, you know, you could, I'm sure, I don't know if you felt this way, but you could figure out the passage of time because there's not a lot of clocks everywhere based on how many times you've gotten visited. And then like, you could hear their shoes. So like different shoes would come in. And I'm like, oh, it's a change in shift. It must be 11 o'clock. And the new security person is the night person has just arrived.
Yeah.
So like you would track these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's felt like prison because like there's just patterns and routines and you always see these movies about how people break out. It's like because they watch everything and they take all this.
Yeah. It's like you calculate everything.
Yeah, because you don't have anything to do but just be there with yourself.
Yeah, like counting the passing of time was like really like at first maybe that was like the hard thing, is like realizing like how much time was actually like being like passing. Yeah.
When you got out that day, what did you do?
I immediately went to like my studio place and like just packed all of that up and pretty much like headed down to Maryland. But I was there, three of my friends met me there at my studio. And like they all like helped pack that up with me. So it was like kind of like a nice like going away kind of a thing. Yeah. So that was really nice.
That is really nice.
And yeah.
Who picked you up?
My dad actually did, surprisingly.
That's nice.
Yeah, he was like, at first it was like gonna be a Friday. And he was like, actually could you wait till like Saturday maybe? Cause Saturday would be better. And I was like, I need to get the fuck out of here now.
Yeah,
so I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I really can't.
Yeah.
I know it's gonna mess up your plans, but I really can't wait that extra day. Yeah,
another like just today.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I'm gonna break. Like I will break.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I can I tell you about what I did when I got
out? Please no, please do.
I had a friend pick me up, like meet me when I got out, and got all my shit. And then we went and got into a cab and went straight to my apartment. And when I got into my apartment, I screamed, "Yeah!" Like so loud. Because I've been wanting to scream, but I didn't want to scream in there because like it's bad behavior and they're going to make me stay longer. But like, this is my first time to have like an outburst and not be judged by it. And so I just screamed so loud, just, ah, when I got into my living room and stomped my feet and just felt great. And I had another friend come over. And so the three of us, we played music and we had like a dance party for like half an hour. And just danced like crazy and like jumped off the couch and all kinds of shit. And then we went out to dinner and got ramen at this place in my neighborhood. And I was like, we should go eat. What do you want? I'm like, I want spicy ramen. Like I want it because the food's been terrible and not spicy. And we went and got ramen. And my friend who lives in Chicago, she paid for it. She was like, heard that I was dealing with all this, and she's like, I'm gonna Venmo you for your dinner tonight because you need it, you deserve it. Wow. And that was really nice.
Wow.
And then I think I came home, and eventually my friends left, and I was just so nice to like be in my own bed, you know, and have no one around here bothering me, you know.
Gosh, man, that is huge.
Yeah. Wow. It was a fucking great day. I remember that day. It was warm, man. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. That was a beautiful memory. Thank you so fucking much. Like, I can't thank you enough. Thank you for sharing this time with me, sharing your story with me, like everything. And just thank you for just being you and just being so honestly you, because every facet of you is just remarkable. I want you to know that from the bottom of my heart, like every part of you is remarkable.
Thanks, Foster. Yeah. I think you're pretty great too.
All right, like, let the people know where they can find you. What's going on?
You can find me on social media at Blaze Mancillas, BlazeMancillas. I post on the gram and the Twitter, and I don't really do TikTok. Apologies for you TikTokers. But yeah, I make lots of things and I do lots of things. Yeah. You can also check out my website,
Blaze. Yeah. And your podcast.
Oh yeah, and I have a podcast. Go to blazecomedy.com. You will see all the things that I do.
It's a super awesome podcast called Let's Get Lit, where you guys talk about literature with comedians, and it's super amazing. So.
Oh yes, that's exactly it. Thank you. Are we about to end? Can we make faces to end it? Since that's how
we can totally make faces to end it.
All right, let's do it.
And we can do it with sound too, if you want to make any sounds or anything like that too.
Don't go crazy now. I don't know.
I mean, it's your world. Hey, I'm just fucking around.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Foster.
Thank you.
Let me know when you're back in the city.
I will. Hopefully it'll be soon. I'm hoping that it'll be in like the new year or something like that. I'll go ahead and stop recording, but